Parliament, Tuesday the 2nd of July 2019, the speech was on the order of the Honourable Chief Minister. In order to move under Standing Order 73 and Standing Order 71, in order to pursue the lay of the institution on the table. No in favour, no against, carried. Speaker, I refer to move that the petition standing in my name and supported by the Honourable Trevor Hammond and the Honourable Marlene Hassan-Naon be laid on the table. Order to move. Speaker, I refer to move that the petition standing in my name be laid.
I now put the question in the terms of the motion proposed by the Honourable Dr. Okay. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. The petition is addressed to the devoted Parliament and reads as follows. Your petitioner requests all members of Parliament to support the creation of a totally independent and funded climate body with technical and dedicated personnel to progress an agreed climate change agenda legally bound to operate within a strict time frame supported at cross party level, and that follows the board of signatures. The Honourable Chief Minister.
Speaker, the other today on the table, the electors of Special Amendment Rule 2019, the Integrated Tariff Amendment Regulation 2019.
Order to read. The Honourable Deputy Chief Minister. I gather to lay on the table a combined paper on draft regulations amending the Civil Aviation Air Navigation Regulations 2009. In order to regulate the use of small unmanned aircraft, including aircraft commonly known as drones, upon drones.
Order to lay. Suspension of standing order, the Honourable Chief Minister. The Speaker, I beg to move under standing order 73 to suspend standing order 71 in order to proceed with government bills. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. Bill, first and second reading. A bill for an act to make provision with respect to the provision of pension plans to employees employed in the private sector to establish a pensions commissioner and for collective services. The Honourable Chief Minister.
Speaker, the Honourable Chief Minister, a bill for an act to make provision with respect to the provision of pension plans to employees employed in the private sector to establish a pensions commissioner and for collective services to be read as first time. I now put the question, is that a bill for an act to make provision with respect to the provision of pension plans to everyone employed in the private sector to establish a pension commissioner and for collective services to be the first time. Those in favour? Against? Carried. The Private Sector Pensions Act 2019. The Council of the bill now be read in second time. Because this bill is for an act which seeks to ensure that for the first time in our history, private sector workers will be entitled to choose whether they wish to make contributions to a pension plan. The choice of a decision is to be of the employee. Should an employee choose to participate in a pension plan, the act then requires the employer to contribute towards that employee's pension plan. In such circumstances, employers in the private sector will therefore have an obligation to provide a pension to employees. This act sets out the minimum that will be required for employers in the private sector, and any employer wishing to more can, at any time, increase their contribution. Again, Mr. Speaker, I want to just reflect on the fact that a very large number of employers in our economy already provide such facilities to their employers, for their employees, and have not had to wait for a compulsory law in order to provide such facilities. What I'd like to say is the role is doing with this bill, however, is ensuring that any member of the community has the option of being protected financially in their later years, quite often, if they are employed to the private sector, to contribute further to a scheme. With that, they felt a starting position. By ensuring that everyone has a pension plan, an individual can then contribute more to that pension plan through their tuition. It will take the government which puts the students in the phase of the most of the pension plan. The implementation of the tax is therefore phased, so that smaller employers have more time to deal with the requirements and have a longer period to make the requisite adjustments. Large employers will be required to comply with the provisions of the Act by July 2021. Medium-sized employers will be required to contribute by July 2022. And small employers, by July 2025, will let micro-employers not having to contribute until 2027. So the definition of whether the employer is small, medium, large, or micro will follow the definitions of the Companies Act, with the requisite changes so that the definitions also apply to employers who are not considered. More specifically, speaking more to the honourable members, I will now set out what different parts of the bill is. Part one of the Act includes provisions as to the scope of the Act to be applied only to employers in the private. Part two includes obligations on employers to either continue with the existing pension plan available to their employees, or if none are in place, to participate in a pension plan established by regulated pension providers. Many income employers will be able to contribute to a pension plan established by the government. It's envisaged that employees who earn less than £18,500 will be able to contribute to the Provident Trust No. 3 pension scheme. This will be further set out by way of regulation. Employees can also elect not to participate in the pension scheme, but it is the duty of the employer to notify the pension commissioner if the employee would like to participate in the pension scheme or otherwise. If the employee chooses not to participate, there is a relevant form that the employee must fill in. Under Section 5, employers will be under a duty to register such participation with the commissioner, which will be the commissioner of income tax. A care will have to be taken so that there is no excessive administrative burden on employers. But there is no exemption for startups, employees will have to have been working for the employer for a year before falling within the provisions of the Act, and especially in the case that startups have a year of growth before the application of the Act. Section 6 requires the employer to provide the administrator of a plan with the relevant information pertaining to that employee. And Section 7 imposes the duty of administrating the pension plan to explain the terms of these to the employees upon joining the pension plan. Section 8 and 9 require the letter to be produced to members and add documents by relevant third parties with consent. And Section 10 specifies which employees qualify to benefit under the obligation of employers to participate in the pension plan. Employees must be 15 years of age or over, earn at least £10,000 per annum, and must have been employed by that employer for a year, and given what I mentioned before about the period of qualification. Where a person is employed by more than one employer, they can be enrolled as a member of the pension plan for which he meets the relevant criteria. Part 3 establishes the minimum contribution rate that an employee and employers will make to the pension plan subject to that, being 2% of the employee's annual earnings, including bonus, under discussion. The employee and the employee will be charged to contribute 2% to the pension scheme, subject to the minimum earnings, which I've already set out to the House. This percentage can be amended by a minister by order in later years. The employers and employees may also choose to make higher contributions at any time and may choose to make different contributions as long as the 2% minimum is met by each. Because this relevant part 3 also allows for the commissioner, the administrator, or a member to recover any amount withheld from an employee's salary at his desk due. So part 4 details the type of advice and orders that will be given by the pension commissioner. And part 5 of the Act establishes the pension commissioner itself. The commissioner says he will register which will list all employers and their employee status under the Act. Section 16 lists the functions of the commissioner, which includes promoting education, pension plans and their benefits, verifying payments made under the pension plan, and the investigation of complaints relating to the pension plan. The commission has provided the powers of entry and search to facilitate the enforcement and monitoring of compliance with the Act, as per the powers granted under the Income Tax Act 2010. will be created a basis for contravention of any provision of the Act or order of the regulation made under the Act. The Act is therefore ensuring compliance by granting power to be able to fine if anyone is found in breach of the Act. Section 1 sets the fine payable for such offences as level 4 in the standard scale, which doubles in case of second or subsequent offence. The main purpose of this Act will be to remedy the discrepancy that exists between private sector workers and public sector workers, to ensure that all workers in Gibraltar are now adequately protected for condemned and submitted. We have already, Mr. Speaker, started to try to regret that even in the case of those already retired and have no provision made for them by supporting the introduction of vital use care of the minimum income safety net of the statutory minimum wage for couples and two-thirds of their life individuals. Future generations are proposing the creation of these rights. Mr. Speaker, all still enjoy the support of the United Unions, who normally have worked and been chosen. I also know that they might have wished this to go even further in some aspects in respect of these rights. I must also acknowledge that the consultation process we went through included the Chamber and the Federation. Although they were not unsupportive of these measures, it is fair to regret that they felt they had gone too far in some respects. I want to nonetheless thank both the Chamber and the Federation on the one part, and the Union on the other part, for their constructive and positive engagement in the process of bringing this bill forward. This is a proposal that we bring to the Speaker from a commitment in our manifesto. It has been greatly delayed by Brexit and by the need to ensure that we are making these changes to our laws. We are not going to make Gibraltar any less competitive in any way than any of our rival jurisdictions. We are confident that the Speaker will strike the right balance. And that the time is right now to make this legislation. The speaker has built in legislation today to provide rights for workers tomorrow. It is right that we should. The benefits to the community as a whole, and to working people in particular, will not be felt for years, perhaps for generations. So when those benefits are felt, I will be proud to be the first introducing this seminal piece of legislation for working people in the private sector. I urge all members to join me in doing this, and I therefore commend the bill to the House.
Before I put the question, I'll then the Honourable Member will just speak on the chair of the House of Commons for the Honourable Roy Clinton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is a particularly important piece of legislation that's come before the House. And as the Speaker has correctly pointed out, it is something that is certainly desirable that we have a pension provision in the private sector. And certainly, on the part of the House, it's a proposition. In principle, we have no problem with that concept. But Mr. Speaker, this is, as I said, a complex piece of legislation. I cannot help but notice, Mr. Speaker, that from the original command paper to the bill before us today, we have lost from the command paper not just a few words or sentences or paragraphs, Mr. Speaker, but entire sections. Whereas the existing bill before us has six sections, the original command paper has 10. And I think we've lost Part 4 on vesting and retirement, Part 5 on locking in contributions and benefits, Part 6 on benefits, and Part 7 on winding up. There seems to be, Mr. Speaker, a private in the way this bill has been originally devised to what is before us today. Now, there is, of course, a question of balance, and it's seeking the right balance for all the stakeholders concerned. So, Mr. Speaker, I'm concerned that although you might not be happy with the bill in Part 4, I'm aware that certainly the Chamber and the Federation would like to have more input in this bill. I also understand, Mr. Speaker, that the Divorce Association of Pension Fund Administrators would also like to have some input in the conversation as to the structure of the And if you think that there are just a cursory review of legislation or some inconsistency, which I would already have to speak of accepting amendments, for example, Mr. Speaker, under Section 4, which is eligibility membership, standing in 2A, must be 15 years old. So, Mr. Speaker, if the qualifying period is 4 months, you have to be employed at age of 14, which is illegal. So, Mr. Speaker, the draw works in the drafting, which still makes sense. It's impossible, Mr. Speaker, for somebody to be eligible at age 14 because he wouldn't have qualified because they've been working for 1 year. The big man in itself is of concern. So, in order to see this, we just have two things to say in respect to the contributions under Section 11, I think 11.1 to be overpaid. But to be some equal to 2% per annum of the employee's earnings from 2% of each. To use the word each, that word is not here. I think that I've read this in the original command paper, as I just now, it's not clear from this wording who pays 2% and how it's expressed, whether it's 2% in total, which is the rate, or 2% each. So that in itself, if you like it, would require some computation. And to see the overall point, that was in fact a point raised by the Chamber itself in its commission to the government, in that that particular clause was not clear. So the Chamber has obviously all private employers have a vested interest come up with the best possible result for themselves. I'm not proposing that we as a part of the House are necessarily supporting that view, but certainly when it comes to setting the balance, we need to take into account their comments. At the end of the day, we all want their support in bringing some measures into place, these measures, which will benefit us all as a community. Instead, the rate of contribution is extremely important. It's extremely important to have absolute certainty on that point. And I think I'm not entirely happy with the idea that the needs to be made by regulation change that percentage. We want to look at the UK auto enrollment legislation, which has now been, I think, finally reached its final level in October 2019. Just to see how stable in terms of when rates would change and what those new rates would be. So, differences looking ahead would know in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and what the cost to them would be. I'm not in that figure. But ironically, I'm not suggesting we're happy with, in the UK, the burden was shifted more towards the employees than the employer. So, we've got to a position, I think, only recently, where employees are finding that they have to contribute a massive amount to the auto enrollment scheme, what we meant with money in the pocket for them. But because we know pensions don't come cheap. And that's right. Unless you have a final salary scheme, which we say is going away with government, Mr. Speaker. New employees, future employees, will have to rely on what is called defined contribution scheme, which is basically what you put in and whatever its investment value is at the end of 20, 30, 40 years, and what you get out, rather than guaranteeing to the speaker. And of course, as a parliament, we have a duty, I think, to make sure that education our young people, that as soon as they start the pension scheme, the better off they will be in old age. And I'm going to something that the entire sector of pension association has been talking about. But of course, the majority of their members now is unfortunately too late, because they will never be able to make up the little contributions to
40 years, and then 43. That time is off. So we have a duty to that able procedure to make sure that the best possible legislation put into place to encourage our young people to play for the future. And that is that speaker, of course, we support the principle. So, Mr. Speaker, the bill is in the veto. I don't understand why so many sections have been cut out from the command paper. The law elements, for example, were stated they have changed. So, Mr. Speaker, in the command paper, the stated date for a large employer was the 1st of July 19. The stated date for the UK term, so basically the date of compliance for a medium employer was the 1st of July 2021. More July 2025, and micro July 2027. Now, Mr. Speaker, obviously, in that case, that's the 1st of July 2019 for compliance date, so it would be less than that. But if you added on 2 years to 2021 to the bill, then you will get to back in 2022. But then, Mr. Speaker, I think residents that need more micro can't have a year added on to their spending date. It's only the large and the medium, but not the small and the micro. And Mr. Speaker, again, the Chamber Federation has a view where if you really are a micro employee or even a startup, should there not be a grace period before which you will not be obliged to start the line of things? That's a debate we can have. It will not be practical if you're in a startup scenario. Again, this is a debate we can have. But if you think that, as I said, there are lots of questions that arise from a cursory review of the legislation. I have been taking the Chamber and the Federation for feedback in terms of what their concerns are. And I understand they are working on our papers within the government as to what the concerns may be. Because there is no urgency for the instruction of the bill other than electoral cycles. I think we still have some time, maybe not a lot, but we still have some time left in the electoral cycle to get this bill before the date of the general election. And I would ask the House to consider delaying the passage of this bill for those reasons, to make sure we get this absolutely right and in the right balance, and to make sure that all stakeholders have their feedback incorporated to the extent possible. So the people who I would propose in the House is amenable is either we submit this bill to a select committee at the end of the second reading, or we delay the committee stage to a future date once we've had all the feedback in from the other stakeholders. And that, Mr. Speaker, would be my view. And certainly, Mr. Speaker, if you have some motion, if we don't go to a select committee of the House, I certainly will be objecting to taking the committee stage today to at least give the other stakeholders an opportunity to get their feedback to the House in terms of any amendments they may wish to propose, which we can then discuss and see in the House. So, the subject of the original urgency to the bill, other than the electoral cycle, I would urge the House to exercise some common sense in considering the passage of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Honourable member was speaking to the Secretary of the Honourable Lady Mr. Speaker,
while the proposed bill is
sound
and the subsequent legislative changes will go a long way to bridging the historical divide between private and public sector workers, it cannot be complete without the recognition of the unacceptable conditions of some current private sector pensioners are enduring now. In one of the richest, in the words of this government, a economies of the world. I have been working closely with the private sector workers and pensioners association for a few years now to bring their concerns to government, a collective that has been ignored, misled, and on occasions outright lied by successive governments. The last attempt by government to appease the association, namely the Household Support Supplement, has not done much to appease the collective. It provides a lifeline to those living in fear desperation, but it continues to tolerate that side effect of pensioners with full old age pensions live on what is effectively a subsistence wage. As a society, we simply cannot afford to have elderly people working well beyond retirement age in order to maintain dignified living conditions or living on meager subsistence wages while politicians go around posting a narrative of economic success. Mr. Speaker, there can be no success if we leave our most vulnerable behind, especially those that have worked hard to build our nation and our economy, who have contributed dutifully to the common cause and who today feel cast aside by their institutions. I believe, therefore, Mr. Speaker, that some form of retroactivity which we have to fall under the responsibility of government must be ensured so that we do not subject the elders of today, those currently retired without occupational pension, to live in dire circumstances in the devoted of luxury real estate development. By voting this bill, we recognize that this collective has been underprotected and marginalized. If we do not do something to ameliorate the lives of those that have been and are being fully affected by this injustice, we will be condemning these people to a moral apartheid, caught in between the injustice of the past and the better future that they will never take part in. So, Mr. Speaker, I will be supporting this bill, but urge government to remember and further engage with the current demographic of elderly public sector, private sector pensioners who await their well-deserved financial assistance. Mr. Speaker, a rich society that does it to their elders is morally bankrupt.
Any other member with speak on this second reading before I call on the mover to reply? No?
Yep.
Thank you for the opportunity to reply. Mr. Speaker, let me just start by reminding you what it was that the demand paper for this bill that was first published. It was published in April of 2018. So, in other words, Speaker, the demand paper was published a year and 3 months ago. And the bill was published in April of this year. In other words, the bill has had many more than 6 weeks to come to fruition and to debate in the Parliament. So the constitutional period for a bill to be published, to be before the community, for all those who may have an interest in it to contribute in common, either publicly, in the media, or directly, in correspondence with members of the House, or indeed the government, with the promulgation of a government bill, is not just us, it is more than us, it is double us. And if you speak up in the period since the command system, government, including the hairdressers, identified changes from the bill of the public. Now, I'm starting to get used to dealing with the contributions of honourable members now. I don't know whether they'll be here after the election, whether we'll have to continue to be used to them or not, but whatever we might have done in the context of the command system, whether we have published exactly the same piece of legislation as a bill, or whether we make changes, who would have been open to criticism? If we had published the same bill that was in the command system, we would be told that we had it listed. And that there was no point in having a demand paper, we were going to publish as a bill that would be the administration. Because we have made changes, Mr. Speaker, we're told that we may have changed too much, and that, you know, why is it that we have done this? Well, I would just call this, because the whole structure of the way that we bring this bill into the House, the concept that we introduced, which is to publish what in the UK would have been known, I think, as white. The community of a before the last election. The answer is what?
And the command paper is a product of those initial discussions. And the bill is a product of those discussions after having given the command paper. And it's because we have had a lot of representations from the end of the federation. And I was not glad in my speech in the second year. Because the senior speaker, I am conscious of the fact that we have done a balancing act. We have not, and this is what I said at the end of my introduction to the bill, we have not done the bill that the Union would have liked to see. Neither have we done the bill that the Chamber of the Federation would have liked to see, because the Great Chairman has been there. The Chamber of the Federation did not want to see the bill. Even though, and I want to point out, and I want to say that, most of the members of the Federation in the Chamber voluntarily consented to the incident without having to be compelled to do it. But as a matter of legislative compulsion, they are not attracted to their own security. That is on our technical belt. Because what one cannot do is, if you get the legal day, the evil day when the legislation one might not want to be on the statute book actually becomes a reality, when it is, in fact, a commitment with a political party is taken to the people and the people who have chosen. And therefore, Speaker, we feel that we have an obligation to bring this to the bill. This is not a bill that arises from a case in the Federal Island. This is a bill that arises from the respect of a direct qualified interval, which requires us, therefore, to do this. We think that we have done the exercise of the second set up in this speech, as if you were the arbiter of. Already, no, we think within 3 years of discussion, 3.5 years of discussion with the Union, the Chamber, and the Federation, we have discussed the core principles of our relevance and we have done the balancing act. We have to speak a lot of business in terms of the Union Committee, because the Honourable Member knows, the most able to take the conversation Thursday week today is requiring the Minister of Housing, who has already given notice that he's not going to allow that meeting to be. I suppose the power he has. Honourable members for the Chamber of Federation, would you see anything into the government that has the majority of the Parliament to be able to amend the bill? They are very welcome to, but they would be welcome to know up to today, Mr. Speaker. And as in fact, after the Chamber's meeting up to the end of the consultation process under the command paper, the period before the publication of the command paper, etc. So, Mr. Speaker, with a very good respect to honourable members, I think it is, frankly, misunderstanding of what the principle of legislation is all about and how the purpose of legislation comes through this house is suggesting we must now send the bill to a committee because honourable members would like themselves to do the balancing out of the government to use this has obviously done figure. And listen to some of the details the honourable member raises, we're going to deal with those issues when we deal with the with the King of State. On the issue of the 15 years, there's no anomaly. There's a very simple reason. And the simple reason is that if you don't put in the age of 15, you're creating a disconnect between the pension and the age at which social insurance contributions start to count for pension purposes under our law. And the reason that we've done that is because it was changed to our law in that respect. Very recently, in fact, I think in the lifetime of this Parliament, or later in the lifetime of the last Parliament, and the lifetime of this Parliament, I'm reminded by because we thought it was unfair that there could be a difference in capital in Gibraltar, like the last in the United Kingdom, and we thought that if people were at work, their contributions to count, and when those contributions didn't count, because of the world, young people's contributions were deemed not to count to count, but we take a completely different view. Therefore, we think that the age from which one should be entitled to have a pension vest is the age of 15. So we put 16 in. Now, that is some who would argue that you wouldn't invest until 17 after you've done the year. And so what we want to be very clear about is the period by which you start to accumulate rights, and that includes the abduction of time, the right to the abduction of time against your wealth is the age of 15.
based on a subsequent review, I think that is a thing arising from unknown evidence, which means the Honourable Superintendent of the Mental Mark would be happy and involved in the conversation with the Catholic Council. No doubt he will raise it again in the Senate stage, and no doubt he will have to deal with it then. On other points, I mean, some points are raised by the Chamber. He says, well, some of these have not been raised by the Chamber with us, which is why I'm very happy to receive these points from the Chamber. In addition to the question of Baron, I think I've already explained it, which means that we have done that exercise already. Because he raises that he's noted under the UK scheme. Was introduced by the Conservative government in the United States. It's not a Labour Party or a Labour government implementation, but the Conservative government implementation. He says, and perhaps as a result of that, it has occurred, that Barron was employing having to contribute larger amounts than employed. I'm not suggesting that we should follow that, of course, Mr. Speaker. And I just think it's because that he's not protesting too much when he makes that point. Because it does seem to me that he wants to come here to make the point that the Chamber would like to hear him make, whilst at the same time trying to pretend to those who he might wish to dupe into thinking that he's a champion of the working class, that he's anything other than that. So, Speaker, he will forgive me for feeling great freedom in that respect. To the date in which the obligation kicks in respect of large, medium, small, micro businesses has been changed from the Vermont Labour Report, which is the Vermont Labour was published in 18, we were not able to go through for the publication of the bill in 18, we published it in 19, and therefore if we proceeded immediately to keep the same basis, of course it would have been immediately upon those and large companies to have an incumbent obligation to have presidential private representatives. It made no sense to do that, and therefore the date has been shifted forward in the way that we have accurately managed to read out in the House. But the date has not been shifted forward in the context of small and medium-sized or micro businesses, because those things were already sufficiently far forward in time that we did not feel it was necessary in the balance of which we did to continue to shift that move forward. It is true that there are no specific provisions in respect of startups. But as I told the House when I made my contribution, if you have a startup, then you don't have anybody who's contributed for more or has been employed for more than a year. So a startup has a grace period equivalent to the period by which the employees must be employed by it before they are able to have these rights. And so a startup has a period grace. If the people come up, I think, as to whether a small and micro businesses should make this provision, I'm going to debate. But I think one of the things that we have not had that debate ourselves, and that we have not considered the decisions ourselves. And although I was only honourable lady's reference to a contact a liberator, what the honourable gentleman is telling us to do is to create an apartheid-style regime. In other words, to say, if you are employed by a small or micro business, something that you might be required to fall out of this protection. Now, if we're saying that this is something that must apply to every worker in our economy, then the size of the employer of the worker is something that cannot come into the equation. Because otherwise, they're not covering every employee in the economy. Now, we have given this a lot of thought. If all the cost of this speech, where there is one person running a business and they're employing one person, I would say that that one person, that one employee, should not have the same right to contribute to a pension scheme as others do. Now, given the amounts that we're suggesting should be contributed with that, very, very modest indeed, because we have been to discrimination, having had this case, that everybody in our economy should be able to be eligible to contribute to a scheme in that way. Look, Speaker, they may wish to persuade the public and the electorate, but actually, if you do a different regime, and they might garner the support,
of micro and small businesses in making the decision. So I do think that given how this economy is operating, the fact that most of our economies are already seeking to provide benefits to their employees without sending for compulsion at all, actually the moral compass of most in the business community is not a durable change in the moral compass to suggest sending them towards excluding people from benefits, but in seeking voluntarily to include people in benefits. And so I want to think that I've been in a number of hours right in that respect, and I think it is absolutely right that we should go to the extreme this way. I think that we should not in front of the person a year and 3 months after the command table was published, almost 4 months after the bill was published, Bill Bocetti tells us that he's trying to get something from the Chamber and the Federation. And he tells us that the Chamber and the Federation are working on data. Well, to figure out how long is the piece of spin and how long can this be long for? To figure out, the older gentleman has told us that he's going to get to the next stage and so he's going to be taken today. So be it, to figure out. If he feels that if he wants to have a listen to the next return date, there is. He's entitled to that under the rules of the House. And that's essentially at least until tomorrow in order to be able to stop the committee statement from reading. But the Chamber of the Federation has not asked enough for more time. And given the strong working relationship that we have with them, a relationship of partnership, which is what's related to the strength of the economy, I'm surprised that that would be the case. But if the Chamber of the Federation wants to bring up those views before the next return date, maybe it's going to be better. Because I would think there's a need for delay to allow feedback by all stakeholders. And I think there is anything to be gained by sending this bill to a committee. I don't think there is anything to be gained for working by delaying the passing of this bill. But Mr. Speaker, when a member of the House gets back and says there is no urgency to pursue, other than an electoral cycle, it is really, Mr. Speaker, a phrase spoken such a well provided convention. And Mr. Speaker, your ruling raises a point that I think I have to deal with, because I do feel dignity. This is the point which he makes and makes over again, and which he is absolutely wrong about. And I think he knows why he is mistaken, because he has taken in relation to existing pensions for the private sector. Because it's the point he's made before, and it's the point that I've answered before. But it's important that I made on the record. It is not true that private sector pensions have been ignored, misled, or indeed lied to, Mr. Speaker, certainly by the government. Far from it. Private sector pensions have been listened to only ever by this administration. Private sector pensions have been met and we have worked through this with wisdom only ever by this administration. And this administration has not lied to anyone, Mr. Speaker, but it is true. So it is true that we have not fulfilled the ambition of some people in the private sector and in the group. Now, Speaker, let me be very clear on this. There is a difference between poverty and wanting more. Some of us are fine with that. But let us not pretend, Mr. Speaker, that people are getting ignored, less or lied to, or that people are living in poverty. When what has happened, Mr. Speaker, and it is important that I clarify what happened and who has made it happen, and the mechanism by which it has happened. What has happened is that we have taken a process that was started by the former administration, which is to provide a minimum income guarantee, and supported the expansion of that principle outside the government. The former administration, although the private sector pension association, I think, was not formed at the time, and the former administration gave rise to this in a different way. The former administration, I'm not here taking this kindly off of the Honourable Minister, introduced something called the Minimum Income Guarantee as a government safety net, so that nobody in our economy over the age of 60 fair because their employers get offered private incentives and they choose not to make these contributions, or because they are taken no contribution as a lump sum and have not necessarily spent them, such as investing them in the market or not, or indeed people who have come from working outside Gibraltar and have worked in Gibraltar for a very short period of time and are not able to have a meaningful amount of money. Once reported, the language I'm going to use now is important in other ways you need to be aware of why. Once reported, with the numbers that you've reported, that the independent and charity billionaires a year is made of an amount which was equivalent not to the minimum income guarantee, but to the minimum wage going into any household in Gibraltar. Therefore, going up every year as the government has put out minimum wage. Calculated on the number of hours that an individual would work at our economy. So, 7.5 hours by 52 weeks a year at 6.75 last year, at £7 this year, at £7.25 next year, at £7.50 the following year. Remember that the minimum wage has gone up already 25% in the first year being in office. We will have gone up by a third given the money by the contribution rate. What has happened? We are faulted, and honorable members will understand why I'm using that word, and not the word you should use, but we are faulted, is that every pensioner couple in our economy has the same money coming into their household as any worker in our economy on the minimum wage. Now, with a worker in our economy on the minimum wage, might be a working person with a spouse and children, and that might be their income. Look, we might all wish that the minimum wage is 5 times what it is today, but look, we're working in economic reality right now. Those families where the breadwinner is earning the minimum wage and the other spouse is not at work and they have one, two, three, or more children, manage their household with the minimum wage. We are saying a pensioner couple that has not got any private sector provision will have, of course, really effective citizens and when they're with other means and yet also have an income of the minimum wage. Least tested at least the minimum wage coming into their household. So let's have now approximately £12,000. Approximately £12,000 a year, approximately £1,000 a month, approximately £250 a week. That's it. Because the only way you get to look at what I am saying, we have supported the introduction of the community care. What is extraordinarily generous? That is not generous, that is extraordinarily generous. Now, it's something that is extraordinarily generous. That doesn't mean, of course, as I said, that it's what people want. Or what people might expect, because some people have indicated, indeed, have said, some of their public statements, that they believe that they too have built the Gibraltar Coffin, which is in some absolutely true, and that they too should be entitled to the same pension that a civil servant is taking, because they have non-contributory final salary benefits. What a figure! So, I understand why people might wish that from this government, either in the political party or the government, has never said anything which can be suggested as being interpreted as a promise, commitment, or otherwise that is what we would provide. Other what we said we would do is that we would provide something linked to our journey, and now we use minimum wages linked to our journey because it's gone up more than other journeys have gone up in our period. And we have provided that. So, if you are a single pensioner, what we have supported the community care that introduced is that you can receive not half the minimum wage in your household, two-thirds, because the two-thirds for an individual is the calculation that is traditionally done in the context of social insurance payments and indeed in other countries. favorable meeting itself. But that is the consistent way. And the minimum wage is the consistent way. Because we can argue this right. We could all make the argument. I want to remember that we know going about it. I think the minimum wage is low. I can see it would be pretty low. I can see it would be pretty low. The rate is more than it is. I have an idea that I get it from the government. Also, the rule is always to be the people who are the lowest wages come up, and then they can have as much as we can in front of the people who are the lowest. So look, let's just write the same thing. I'm sure we will all anything that could be characterized
because one man is going to stand in the way. When the time comes, our written record will speak for itself on all matters, not just those that are the most controversial. Thank you.
So sometimes makes a connection which managed to encapsulate in one word or a phrase, doesn't come in the last name, not having to do it. It's supposed to be something, but what we are wanting to do is bigger, easier, sensitive, come to the house, and to come working people into big things with a good reason for delaying the consideration of the committee for the third reading of the bill. Because we have read the bill already a second time anyway, and we were about to vote. So the administration said we would be intending to vote. The most important thing is the rule, I think, is one which should be taken immediately after the second reading, not immediately when we are now. That's right. Not now, when we are already voting, going to the administration third meeting. So that's how we should do that. The motion will not enjoy the support of the government of the country. And I put the motion in the term of the Honourable John Kingston. Those in favour? Those against? The mover, Terry Chairman, my apologies, I should have been told to meet to reply. The Public Services Ombudsman Act 1998 to provide for the investigation of complaints from students by students about abuse of the U.S. in Gibraltar and for clinical purposes. The
the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commerce and Tourism and Sport.
I'm going to go to the hospital.